Brian Lehrer on WNYC. By the way, for those of you who don't know Jersey so well, we've been saying tornado warning for Monmouth County. If you don't know Monmouth County, that does include Asbury Park, also places like Long Branch and Freehold Township and Manalapan and Manasquan, also Shrewsbury and Hazlitt, around Atlantic Highlands, that's Monmouth County, Bradley Beach, Seagirt, and Seabright. So, you know, all those places around there, that's all Monmouth County. So if you live there, I know you know that, but if you don't live there and you weren't sure whether to travel to somewhere in New Jersey you're supposed to travel to, I wouldn't travel to any place right now unless you really need to in our area, because the hurricane watch is in effect for the whole area. I said hurricane watch, tornado watch is in effect for the whole area, and that even includes New York City. But tornado warning means a tornado is really imminent. It's not just a potential, and the warning is in effect for Monmouth County, which is along the ocean and includes some of those towns that I mentioned and cities and others. So there you go. Now, there's an intriguing new twist in the news in the Manhattan DA's effort in court to force the release of some of Donald Trump's tax returns and other financial records. Simply put, if you thought the New York case was only about hush money paid to Stormy Daniels and how they might have fudged the books to cover that up, a filing by DA Cy Vance yesterday makes it look like they're investigating much more serious financial crimes. But rather than me trying to explain this to you, we have called on our in-house expert on Trump business dealings, Andrea Bernstein, co-host of our podcast, Trump Inc., which is about how Trump's business interests and the American public interest intersect or conflict. Andrea is also author of the New York Times bestselling book, American Oligarchs, the Kushners, the Trumps, and the Marriage of Money and Power. Hi, Andrea. Thanks for coming on.
Hi, Brian. Great to be with you.
So here's the line everyone's latching on to. It's that in arguing to the court for the release of the financial records, Vance said there was nothing unusual about those subpoenas, quote, in light of these public reports of possibly extensive and protracted criminal conduct, at the Trump Organization, unquote. Why is that line raising so many eyebrows?
Well, I think it's crystallizing the fact that this district attorney, the Manhattan District Attorney's investigation, is a wide-ranging investigation into Trump's business. It's not entirely a surprise, and we can surmise from the fact pattern that the district attorney, Cyrus Vance Jr., requested 8 years of tax returns from Trump's accountants, that he's doing a thorough investigation. That's not atypical. There've also been previous filings in this and where he's indicated that they are looking into various crimes committed in the state of New York. And also, parallel to this, there's been both journalistic reporting, some of it by us, some of it by our colleagues, some of it by the Washington Post, about, obviously this tremendous series by the New York Times, in which they said that the Trump Organization had committed outright fraud, as well as the court cases. So the biggest one, obviously, being the Southern District case against Michael Cohen, in which he alleged and provided publicly documents that the Trump Organization had committed crimes. He said it in his public testimony. So we know all of this has been bubbling around. I think what's different now is Vance really wants this hurried up. So the whole case was delayed basically a year by Trump's legal challenges. And now Vance wants to move it forward. So the tone in this brief was sharp. For example, there was one point where Vance's lawyer put in parentheses, plaintiff assumes, the plaintiff is Trump, the grand jury investigation is limited to so-called hush money payments. Well, that is kind of snarky. And I think it's a signal from Vance that he wants this to move forward and to move forward quickly and get access to those records, which is obviously not the end of an investigation, but very much part of an investigation in progress.
Mm-hmm. And people, you'll remember that this is happening right now because this was all frozen. Andrew just said it was frozen by the president's legal maneuvers for the last year. Yes, that's what took it to the Supreme Court recently, with Trump's claim that he has absolute immunity, that he may not be investigated for anything he might have done ever while he's sitting as president of the United States. And the Supreme Court said, no, you can be investigated. You're still a person in this country. So now the case is going forward, and this particular New York case having to do with these potential crimes that Cy Vance is trying to figure out whether to charge him with, they're looking for the tax returns and other financial records. And one example cited by the DA has to do with exaggerating the value of his properties to insurance companies and banks. Another thing the DA cited on insurance fraud has to do with things that Trump's former lawyer and fixer, Michael Cohen, testified before Congress. So, Andrea, can you explain or remind people what some of these things are? Allegedly,
right.
Or potentially, right. So, I guess we should say.
Yes. And I should just say, we saw in the brief yesterday, and we've seen it in Vance's arguments all along, the line, every day that goes by is another day plaintiff effectively achieves temporary absolute immunity. So basically, they're saying Trump is winning by keeping these documents out of their hands. I mean, he has immunity until Vance gets them and is able to investigate. But to your question, I mean, I think one of the most vivid crystallizations of this was during questioning during the Michael Cohen hearing. This was February of 2019, by Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who asked him very directly about, did it ever happen that the president said that his properties were worth less than they were worth for tax purposes? He said, yes. She asked him, did it ever happen that he said they were worth more than they were worth for bank lending purposes? And he said, yes. And in fact, we on our podcast, along with our colleague Heather Vogel of ProPublica, Heather unearthed some terrifically specific documents in New York, because as it happens in New York, your property tax returns become public if you dispute your tax return, which Trump always does. So she was able to get his tax documents, and she was able to make an apples-to-apples comparison. This was an episode called The Numbers Don't Match, in which Trump, when reporting to New York City tax authorities, omitted certain streams of income that he put into bank loan requests. And when you request a bank loan, these are not supposed to be just estimates or puffery. It's supposed to be the actual income stream, because you're putting the whole sort of entire security system at risk in some respect. So we have found specific instances where Trump did this, and this appears to be the kind of thing that DA Vance is honing in on.
Trump yesterday called this part of the Democrats' witch hunt, his word. Is that a legal defense that the judge will actually have to rule on regarding Cy Vance as he goes after the tax returns, whether the request for those tax records is politically or legally motivated?
So the U.S. Supreme Court, which obviously said the president is not immune from criminal investigation by local prosecutors, pretty much brushed that aside. Trump's lawyers are still arguing it. Yesterday in his papers, Vance said that Trump would have the court infer that the DA's office is colluding with news reporters and unspecified Democrats to make the requested records public. But that's pretty much
He is an elected Democrat, we should point out, right? DAs
right.
are elected. They run in parties. He's a Democratic Party politician.
That is true. But the, you know, Trump papers, which they have done since they began this case, which is now 11 months ago, back in September, almost, by the way, the time the whistle, exactly coinciding with the time the whistleblower in the Ukraine scandal was, the report was being released. But the Trump's lawyers have pointed to things that have been said by independently elected officials, by Governor Andrew Cuomo, by Attorney General Tish James, by Democrats in Congress, and sort of conflated that with the DA's request for documents to try to sort of undermine the credibility of his investigation. But what we were talking about earlier, there's sort of ample evidence in the public record of potential criminality. The DA would be remiss not to look at this, no matter what party he or she, if it was in another jurisdiction, was in. So, I mean, I think we've heard that argument before. We hear it every time. And it's just a way to get people to undermine faith in the criminal justice system. And if there were, for example, to be an indictment or a conviction or some other legal action, the Trump has and his lawyers have laid the groundwork to say, well, it's not credible because it's coming from this partisan official. So I think that that is pretty clearly what that is about.
Ian in Princeton, you're on WNYC with Andrea Bernstein. Hi, Ian.
Hi, how's everybody? I'm just curious, given Trump's long history of litigation, constantly litigating everything, will he just run the clock out on this? Not only for the election, but just in general?
Well, I think, frankly, in terms of the election, realistically, he already has. Now, the judge that is going to be making a ruling in this case, a Southern District federal judge named Victor Marrero, ruled 10 months ago that Trump was Trump's accountants were required to respond to this subpoena for records. And then Trump went to the Second Circuit, and then he went to the U.S. Supreme Court. And now they're back arguing the parameters of the subpoena, which if there had never been a Supreme Court case about the constitutionality is where this case may have been. I mean, that's what white collar defendants do. More indigent defendants don't have that possibility open to them. But I mean, realistically, say, for example, the judge ruled tomorrow that these records had to be turned over. Well, I mean, there are stacks and stacks and stacks and stacks of tax returns. It's not just like you get the document and you have a smoking gun or a DNA match or something like that. You have to go through this sort of terrifically detailed forensic accounting analysis. And that takes a long, long time. So I think realistically speaking, we are unable to see specific legal action before the election in November.
And not only does that take a long time in the way you describe it, grand jury proceedings are secret. So even if the judge were to grant the request to look at the tax returns and there was to be an aha moment smoking gun in there, that does not mean the public gets to see them before Election Day. Isn't that correct?
Right. And I think that's really an important point. And this was actually one of the points that was argued in front of the Supreme Court. And the Supreme Court actually seriously considered this. Judge Alito, during the oral argument, said, well, the Manhattan DA's office is known for leaking grand jury documents. And I was like, really? Has not been my experience. But that
is it true? Because, you know, if we weren't talking about Trump and we were talking about prosecutors in general, we could, I think, be very easily having a conversation with, oh, those prosecutors, they leak selective information about defendants in public cases. They're so unfair. Right.
Well, let me just say, in my experience, that is not the case. Now, it doesn't mean I haven't cracked open some grand jury secrets in my career, but it's tremendously difficult. And it is not something that just comes easily. So I think, you know, given the heightened scrutiny now on this case because of the Supreme Court case, that is very, very unlikely to happen. So we're going to have a situation where the records go to the DA, but then we, the public, have to wait if and when there is some kind of court filing to learn anything about what's in the documents. Now, I should also say that, you know, there were these other Supreme Court cases involving House subpoenas of Trump's accountants and also of Deutsche Bank. And there's still litigation going on that. So it's possible that some of the information could be released prior to the election through those court actions. But that is still being litigated in the courts.
Peter in Tampa, you're on WNYC with Andrea Bernstein. Hi, Peter.
Hi, I'm barely from Tampa. I'm really from New York. So, so Andrea, you're from New York too, right?
I'm from New York, yes.
You're from New York. You know,
now that
New
we've
Yorkers,
established that.
Yeah, okay. New Yorkers have seen this coming for years. I mean, you say the Bonwit Teller building, and his tax shenanigans. We've seen this happening for years. And so I was wondering, Andrea, have you read the Mary Trump book, Too Much and Not Enough?
Yes, I have read the Mary Trump book. And as Brian mentioned, I also wrote my own book, American Oligarchs, Kushner's The Trumps and the Marriage of Money and Power. And in it, I talk about the ways in which Trump beguiled investigators or evaded consequences from criminal investigations over and over and over again. And one of the chapters in the book, which was based on reporting that we originally did for WNYC and ProPublica and The New Yorker, was how this very same DA, Cyrus Vance, chose not to indict Donald Trump's adult children for felony or other frauds in connection with marketing the Trump Soho hotel. So we have seen how Donald Trump has very effectively worked the system through trying to express dominance over DA, through donating to DAs. Donald Trump and his father, Fred Trump, were very big donors to the previous DA, Robert Morgenthau's favorite charity, the Police Athletic League. It's hard to say that any of this specifically affected any case in that instance, but it was clear that Donald Trump thought it would, that he thought currying up to federal agents and two district attorneys would help him avoid consequences. And that is something that each time he did it throughout his career, his father did it before him, he did it, and each time he did it and got away with it, it emboldened him to push the envelope further. And I think that is exactly what we are seeing now, where Trump's lawyers actually went to court and argued that he could shoot somebody on Fifth Avenue and not even be investigated by local law enforcement so long as he's sitting president.
I'm going to share some breaking news with you and everybody. Andrea, this is not Trump news, and I don't know if you're going to have any analysis of it because you've been on the Trump beat for a while now for Trump Inc., but Dr. Oxyris Barbeau, the New York City Health Commissioner, has resigned. And Mayor de Blasio has just announced a new commissioner at a news conference. It is Dr. Jave Chokshi. He's from the Department of Mental Health and Hygiene currently. He served at the highest levels, this says, of local, state, and federal health agencies, including the New York City Health and Hospitals Corporation, where he was in senior leadership roles over the past 6 years. As the chief population health officer, Dr. Chokshi's team transformed healthcare delivery, the mayor says, for over 1 million New Yorkers. And most recently, he served as a key leader in the city's COVID-19 response, which is obviously ongoing. And Andrea, I don't know if you've been paying attention to the tensions between Mayor de Blasio and his health commissioner, which I think date back to the very beginning of COVID. I think that there were times where she wanted to be tougher than he was. There were times where he thought she was being too lax. And I don't know that there was any, you know, gross failure or, you know, it's not a behavior kind of firing, but I don't know if there's any gross incompetence or anything like that there, but some different approaches, and they were not getting along from the beginning of this, and she was excluded from a lot of the news conferences that the mayor held, though she was also at some of the news conferences. This is not your beat, but just in case you have any impression of what happened there.
Right. So I only know what I know from reading about it and, you know, a few sort of tips that people have reached out to me that I've actually passed on to my colleagues, because it's been a long time since I've covered city government. But it has been clear that there have been tensions between Bill de Blasio and his health department since the beginning of the pandemic about various possible approaches. And so I wouldn't say that this news necessarily comes as a surprise.
Right.
I would expect there to be, you know, some concern among both members of the public and members of the department about, you know, shifting a health chief in the middle of a pandemic.
Last question, back to Trump Inc. stuff. What happened with Michael Cohen in July? He was released from prison due to COVID concerns, then imprisoned again, and then re-released. Did you follow all that? I'm losing track.
Yes, this was so amazing. So back in July, so Michael Cohen is released to his apartment as a sort of COVID accommodation. And he's allowed to stay in or near his apartment. And he goes for a check-in with the authorities, and they ask him to sign a piece of paper that says, among other things, he's not going to write a book, and he's not going to be on social media, and he's not going to talk to reporters. And he says he doesn't want to sign it. And they say, if you don't sign it, you're going to jail. And he says, oh, okay, well, let me call my lawyer. And they say, nope, too late, you're going to jail. And so the ACLU takes up his case, and they file in federal court, and they go into federal court and they make the case that this was an example of his having his First Amendment rights revoked. And what was so extraordinary was that a federal judge said in the court case, in the hearing, that he had never seen anything like this in 21 years. And he found it retaliatory about Michael Cohen's intentions to publish a book sometime before the election, which, you know, would presumably be very soon, and ordered that he be released and had, you know, made arrangements right then and there in the sort of online court conference to have his son go pick him up at Otisville prison the next day. So that is what happened. And the Southern District, which was sort of like uncomfortably, you could sort of hear the discomfort in these prosecutors in making the case for allowing the Justice Department to revoke those First Amendment rights. I mean, their arguments sounded to my ear sort of half-hearted. They have decided not to challenge the judge's decision, so it just stands. This was retaliation against Michael Cohen for his plans, and he is back home at his, at his apartment in Midtown.
And a little more breaking now on the resignation of New York City Health Commissioner Oxyris Barbeau. In Dr. Barbeau's letter of resignation to the mayor, she apparently expressed her displeasure with being locked out of leading the city's new contact tracing program. Health department traditionally does contact tracing. It already does it for other diseases, but the mayor, with whatever tensions he was having with her and her department, gave it to the Health and Hospitals Corporation, a different agency. And she said in her resignation letter, "Our experts are world-renowned for their epidemiology, surveillance, and response work. The city would be well served by having them at the strategic center of the response, not in the background." So obviously, Dr. Barbeau feeling marginalized, and now she has stepped away. Further, she said, "I leave my post today with deep disappointment that during the most critical public health crisis in our lifetime, that the health department's incomparable disease control expertise was not used to the degree it could have been." So politics in the midst of a pandemic. There you go. Did you want to say something about that?
No, I wanted to say that it is true that the New York City Health Department is renowned for its contact tracing and for its work in public health, HIV, other areas, tuberculosis. It is recognized for having had a track record in that area. And at the time that Bill de Blasio made the decision to turn it over to HHS, a number of people that had worked in that area expressed alarm. As I mentioned, I sort of, you know, passed on whatever I heard to my colleagues who are working on this. But I know that in the context when this has come up nationally, when Donald Trump or Jared Kushner have shaken up the existing organization, the response to me from public health, from emergency management experts, and these are both people who have worked for Trump or who have worked for previous administrations, have said the general rule in an emergency is you don't change the structure during the emergency, even if it's imperfect.
Right.
And that looks like what may be happening here.
Yeah, and Mayor de Blasio's position for the record has been that the health department does contact tracing, but for much smaller disease outbreaks, and that the Health and Hospitals Corporation, who obviously had more faith in the people who run that group, also has a lot more people contact on a day-by-day basis. So more direct, boots on the ground, getting personal medical information from people, just to put the mayor's position on that on the record. But we thank Andrea Bernstein, co-host of Trump Inc., the podcast that looks at the intersection of Trump's business interests and the public interest, and author of the New York Times bestselling book, American Oligarchs, the Kushners, the Trumps, and the Marriage and Money of Money and Power. I have a feeling this won't be the last time we're talking about this topic. Thanks, Andrea.
I'm guessing not. And thanks for taking me down to the very limits of my knowledge on a subject, referring to the Bill de Blasio Health Department matter. I look forward to hearing more on your show from somebody who's actually been reporting on that.
Absolutely.
Thanks, Brian.
Thanks a lot.